Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so lovely to hear.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
No, it's a pleasure. You're brilliant. You're a brilliant interviewer, man. Hey,
thank you for your wonderful questions.
I really liked your questions.
Best with these things. Just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight, too.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for your lovely review. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I love it. And, and it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Today we welcome Alex Miles. Since publishing her first play at 17, Alex has worked across theatre, television and advertising, having written under the pen name H.I. Larry for the Zach Power series and under her own name for the Olive Black series. Today we talk about the Olive Black series, The Pyramid Puzzle. I'm your host, Danny V. Thank you so much for joining me today, Alex. The Pyramid Puzzle with our protagonist, Olive Black, was such a joy to read.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I find books aimed at that 10-year-old age gap kind of tricky. They're in between that age of young children going into young adult fiction, which not every 10-year-old is going to be ready for. But I found a really nice balance between kind of innocence and beginning to touch on more of those serious issues. How did you balance that line when you write this series?
Oh, thanks. I think Olive was a really fun character to me, and I've had her in my head for a really long time, and I always thought she'd be about 10 years old, but I think because she's an actress, she's kind of exposed to what I guess a lot of seemingly adult things with being in social media and having a lot of adults around her. But I think because the books kind of split her acting life and her home life evenly, and I reckon actually the stories are more so about what her life is like at home and at school and with her friendship group and her family relationships, that even though she's in this other kind of world, which probably by 10 years old girls would be interested to read about what it's like to be an actress or what's it like to be a, I hate this word, but celebrity. So I think maybe that was how I got the balance, and that the stories at their heart were actually all about friendship and things that any 10-year-old girl is going to be going through, but I guess you're showing through the lens of this glamorous movie lifestyle.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little side hobby for her, wasn't it? Like school was the main thing, and being this international famous actress was just this kind of little hobby she has.
Just this thing on the side, yeah. Well, even in her backstory, it was important to me that she wasn't like a real diva actress. Yeah, so. Like in the backstory, she like was spot like her. She's from a coastal town and was spotted at, like she was a surfer and was spotted to be in a surfing movie when she was 7 years old. And then so it kind of that's how she fell into acting. Ended up having this remarkable talent and winning an award, like the earliest, like the youngest kind of actor to win this Best Supporting Actress award. And then her career took off from then. But it was important for me that she wasn't from like, as opposed to Sophia LaBouche, her nemesis, who's like the biggest bully in showbiz. Sophia's family, her dad's a producer, and she's kind of like all the things that you really dislike about celebrity culture. I was kind of able to put all of that into Sophia's character, which left Olive to be really down to earth and kind of like an every girl kind of character.
Mm. And I think it's really important for teenagers to be exposed to that celebrity culture as well, because I read this article that said, you know, when you ask kids what they want to be, they don't kind of say, oh, I want to be a doctor or an accountant or anything like that. They just say, I want to be famous. And isn't that an odd thing?
It's odd and it's so sad as well. I think that's partly what appealed to me about like when I had the idea, what excited me about it was that it could be both of those things. I kind of thought it would get kids into reading and into the series by, I guess, kind of going, oh, it's about someone who's famous. I want to read about someone who's famous. But then behind the scenes, they would actually be getting to know this character who does, and I guess it shows that you can be in that world. You can be famous and have a profile, but actually still have really good values and, yeah, and kind of have, I guess, yeah, have yourself aligned with the things that actually matter in life, like being a good friend and looking out for your family and being loyal and having fun and not taking yourself too seriously. Yeah, it's been actually fun with each of the books because they're each on set of a different genre movie. So it's, I've kind of been able, that's been a really fun way of making each of the books fun to write. Like they've all been so different because you can kind of use the, I guess, the sort of style of each of those movie genres for the different books. But it's also been a way to show Olive in different, a whole different, like, you know, I guess challenges that, yeah, that, like being able to frame it in the movie sort of theme. So one of them, Halloween Queen, I'm not sure if you read that one, but she is, that one, she's a witch. It's like a movie about Halloween and she's a witch and Sophia is playing the good witch and Olive is the bad witch. And she has to go through, like wear all these hideous face prosthetics. And it's about sort of in its heart, it's about identity and body image. And it's sort of for the first time in Olive's life, she's normally so, you know, likes to think, oh, I'm not going to think about, you know, I'm not going to take myself too seriously, or it's not about how you look, it's how you act, you know, the type of person you are. But for the first time, she actually finds herself sort of worrying about her image and worrying about the way she looks. And I think, like, by being able to explore it in those sort of ways, and then her to have the network around her of her family and friends, that she's able to kind of come out the other end and hopefully have a good message for the readers without it feeling like they're getting a message.
And you must know her pretty well now, writing her first series. Where did inspiration for her first emerge?
It was years ago. I was actually on a road trip with a friend of mine who was working in radio, well, still does work in radio, and we so we had these long drives up from, like, New South Wales and Queensland, and we just, like, brainstormed ideas the whole way along the trip. And we ended up at SeaWorld kind of as a bit of a gag. We thought, like, these two grown women going to SeaWorld together, but we just thought that would be a fun thing to do. And we I don't know why, but I remember coming out of, like, that, you know, that dolphin thing where they all, like, ride around on the dolphins, yeah, at SeaWorld. Came out of that, and I don't know why, but somehow it just, this idea of a character who was a movie star came into my head. And then it kind of just, I chewed on it for a while and started writing some drafts. It wasn't one of the ones that is of the current five, was the first one. I can't even remember what it was now. It might have been an action movie, I think, was the movie genre. And then put it away for a little bit. So it was probably about 8 years from first idea to it coming out last year, the first one coming out last year. The biggest thing that changed for me, though, was I did the RMIT professional writing and editing course, mm-hmm, a few years ago, which was just so fantastic and had the most incredible teachers and met, yeah, just ended up having a really good group of people that you could go through who, yeah, were all each other's cheerleaders and all kind of helped each other with our work. And I ended up doing Olive in one of my classes there. And so after that year, I had really refined her a lot. And then even after that, there was a publisher was going to take it, and then that fell through, and then sat in the drawer for another year or so, and then thought, oh, no, I'll give it another crack. And then eventually it came through.
So you've known her for a really long time.
Yeah, it's a really long time. I totally feel like she's a real person. And it's funny, with my older son George is 3 now, and her name is Olive because my niece, his name is Olive, and she, Olive, like the real Olive, was about 1 year old when I first got the idea, which is why her name was front of mind. And then, so yeah, George will even talk about, like, cousin Olive and Olive Black, and he will kind of think about her as a real person too.
That's funny. And I hear so many authors say that that community of writers is kind of what changed their writing process or propelled them into a different space to enable them to get something published. Was that the same for you as well?
Absolutely. And in two ways, partly to get it published and also just since being published, the community has been, it's been probably one of the most surprising, enjoyable and absolutely lovely things to have been a part of. But firstly, on the getting it published part, so we, after I finished the course, I can't remember, like, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago or so now, there was a group of, I did a YA, a writing for YA class, and Claire Renner was my teacher, and she was absolutely brilliant. Sally Rippon was actually one of my teachers in a writing for children class as well. And she was actually the one who, I had a picture book idea, and Sally was helping me write a cover letter for that. Mm-hmm. Part of the class was learning how to pitch and learning how to write cover letters. And so, and she just signed the Billy B. Brown series. And so I remember staying back after class one day and we went through the cover letter together and she helped me edit it. And then she sent it off to Hardy Grant for me, which I think just meant that it wasn't right at the bottom of the splash pad, like they actually read it. And then they came back and said, look, we're not doing picture books, but would you like to write for Zach? And which then became four books, signing for four, and then another four books on that one. And so Sally was amazing and Claire was amazing. And in this, after I finished, there was a group of us, it ended up being four of us who met every fortnight for probably 2 years after we finished. And we just workshopped each other's work. And it was so, so important, partly because having that deadline, basically on a Sunday night, we'd have to send it through, the chapter that we're working on. And then we'd meet up on like the Wednesday night and be able to, we'd all have read each other's work and be able to talk it through. So partly just that having that critique was amazing, but also just having the cheerleaders and the people to be able to be, you know, you can have a whinge if you're at a really hard bit or, you know, they just help you keep going or, yeah, it was really, really fantastic. So my first, the first of the olives is dedicated to those three girls.
Oh, it's nice.
Just cool. So, yeah, I had written for the Zach series, but that was obviously as a ghostwriter. So this was my first experience of, you know, having my name on a book and actually feeling like an author. Like I still kind of feel like I'm a bit of a, you know, it's not actually real. This is my job. But when, after Olive first came out, I was so surprised by how kind other authors were to me and to, like, just was so generous with their advice and with their support, and that's easily been one of the absolutely wonderful things of the last year, is just like connecting with all these other authors and feeling like you're part of community and that you're not just sitting at home writing by yourself. You're actually part of this group of people who really care about getting kids interested in reading. It's been really, really fun having that the whole part of it.
Yeah, I've absolutely found that. The Australian writing community particularly are just so supportive and so positive, and it's just such a nice space to be, especially when there's all these other things going on in government and in the world. You can kind of just push all those things aside, and this community, it's just so kind and supportive and encouraging, and, you know, people are trying to change the world through literature, and it's really nice.
Yeah, and it's so, it's really exciting to be a part of that.
Mm. What I liked most about the book Pyramid Puzzle was that it can be read for pure enjoyment or you can dig a little deeper if you want to. I'm reading it for the second time now aloud to my six-year-old. I read it to myself and then he was like, hey, what's that? Because he likes Egypt and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Can you read it to me? So I'm reading it for the second time now. Now I'm picking up all these other things that I didn't the first time.
Oh, cool. And I'm excited that he's a boy and is he liking it?
Yeah, he's loving it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's been actually quite surprising. But I sort of imagine naturally girls would be more into it because it's a female lead, but I've been quite surprised by the number of parents and teachers who've said to me that their boys have been into it. I think it depends on which book. Like, so say Halloween Queen The themes in that are going to appeal more to a girl. And in Mammoth Mistake as well, it's about like her friendship with her best friend, Rani, and that one's probably more into girls as well. But certainly the Pyramid Puzzle, where she's like an Indiana Jones kind of character in that one, and the Robbery Riddle and the and Puppy Planet have been more into boys. So I'm excited that he's liking it. Yeah. And that's really cool. I'm glad that it's working on a couple of levels for you. That's exciting. That's really made my night. Thank you.
Well, I'm trying really hard not to get my kids stuck into just reading things that are typically for boys or typically for girls. Yeah. Like, I think it's important for a boy to be reading from a girl's perspective and vice versa. So I'm kind of not even making that a big deal. You know, he liked the cover of it. He saw me reading it. He wanted me to read it. So I'm like, let's read it. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm trying to do that balance where we just read everything, you know.
That's good. That's good.
Well, I'm reading everything aloud until he can read these books.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed the illustrations throughout. I mean, it's not a picture book, but I think it's important to break it up with these little images. Yeah. And your artist, how does your vision and the publisher's vision and the artist's vision, how do they all come together? Take us through that process.
Yeah, it was she's done such a great job, Maud. So Maud Gousnet is her name. She's French. I think she was living in Bali when she worked on a series. And she's actually a fashion designer as well. So that is why Ollie's outfits are way cooler than I would have ever been able to imagine. Because she was quite a tomboy in my head when I wrote her. And then as she's come to life, she's definitely way more sassy and cool. So Claire Hume was my editor. Davina Bell was the editor on the last couple of books, but it started with Claire, who was just an absolute jet. I love her, and I learned so much from her. Claire and I were both on the same page in terms of, like, we wanted Olive to be, we didn't want it to be too cartoony but not too arty, and we wanted her to be, like, sassy and fun, but also, like, my biggest thing to Claire was, like, I don't like pink. I don't want it to be girly. I just, yeah, she's not a girly girl. Claire agreed with that, luckily. And, we just found, like, I think we trialed a couple of different different illustrators, and then, Maud was just easily just hit it on the head. So we went with her. What was interesting, though, which I hadn't been a part of this process before in terms of doing illustrator briefs, and I was probably, I think because I had lived with this character for so long, I was really, really involved in particularly the first book, in just like Claire and I would write the illustration brief together, and I'd be checking over everything and sending through example images of what I, you know, in my head, what maybe the school style of the school was, or the style of her house, or different characters, and then as the series went on, they definitely just knew what they were doing, so I was able to have a lot less to do with that. But because she was French, it was an interesting. We found that the first couple of rounds took a little bit longer than normal to get right, and then Claire ended up saying to me down the day, I think it's just because the way you talk over email, or you turns a phrase you might use, you actually, like, she obviously was translating everything into French and always, you know, reading this as her second language, so was taking everything really literally. And so we had to, Claire ended up saying, she's like, I feel really quite cold and direct and rude, but I have to just, like, be, like, not kind of write it in a you know, particularly nice way. I just need to say these are the things that you have to do. So once we learned the way to kind of get through the language barrier, then she was absolutely firing. She's done, I adore her illustrations. If you get a chance, the Puppy Planet one is my favourite. She's done all these dogs in that one. So in that one, Ollie's the voice of a dog that goes to space in the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's an animation. So, and in her real life thing that she goes through is that she, for research for the movie, she visits a animal shelter and falls in love with this dog, and then ends up kind of owning this dog. And it's about learning to deal with responsibilities and being a pet owner for the first time. And all, like, she has done the most, there's so much fun with all her, all the animals that she's done. And I think it's just the Frenchiness of it as well that makes it not too cartoony, but still kind of quirky. Like the outfits that she gives people, or sometimes like the pointiness of their shoes, or like the length of their legs, or things like that, have made it. Yeah, kind of made it. I love them.
I loved them too. I love the illustrations. Mm-hmm. I thought that was spot on too. Yeah. When you were thinking about, when you're reading your parts in the novel and then looking at the images, I felt like they're just married together so well.
Oh, good. Oh, cool. That's great. Yeah, I adore her. I think she's done a great job.
Something I had to laugh about in the novel, and maybe this was something for the parents who are reading it aloud, was the Spice Girls reference and how the girls go, who on earth were the Spice Girls? I thought, oh, wow, that's like showing my age, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think back now, because that one ended up coming in like really late, that reference. Like either in the copy edit or certainly in the structural edit. It wasn't in at the start. I think I needed something, I can't even remember it now, but I remember it was, I needed something as like a frame. Oh, that's right. I needed something for like a frame of reference for the 90s. Mm-hmm. When I was thinking about when the teacher had gone to school, and then I was like, big Spice Girls. Well, weren't we all, hey? But I just had flashbacks to when I was in high school, and we'd have the talent show, and we'd all, like, my friends and I would be dressing up as the Spice Girls, and you'd all have, you know, I'd be like, who's going to get to be Scary Spice, and who's the posh one? And so, I think I just channeled a bit of that when I realised, hang on a second, that happened in the 90s. That can be my reference.
And how funny is it that they were so famous, but now this generation are like, who are they?
Who is that? I know. It's funny, isn't it?
I love that. And that's that other thing about celebrity culture, isn't it? You're here 1 minute and gone the next and replace the next. I thought that was a little hidden thing. Now, the book takes us to Egypt, which is pretty exciting. And in your dedication, you state that year 3 and 4 students at Eltham College shared their real life experiences of Egypt with you. Tell us about this.
Oh, this is the most random thing that happened. So last year's book week, I was visiting Eltham College to chat to the kids there about writing, and I just had started work on the pyramid puzzle, and I was pregnant at this point. I was probably like, I don't know, 20 something weeks by that point, and had to finish the manuscript before little Freddie came along. And I remember like the week before book week thinking, all right, I'd sort of done the rough plot. I knew that there would be some sort of school project, like the kind of real life thing that would be happening for Olive, would be to do with like digging up the past and some sort of Egypt project. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, I'm going to have to build in some time to do a bunch of research and make sure it's accurate about like what kids would actually learn in school and what are the things that kids are actually going to be excited to learn about Egypt. And so then it was at this school talk, and as we finished, the librarian took me through this different room as we were leaving, and she's like, oh, this is just this thing we've got set up at the moment. We do this thing, spend a whole term working on Egypt, and the kids like recreate this whole, like a burial of the pharaoh. And I was like, whoa, hang on a second. Can you take me through that again? And then as she talked to me about it, it actually was exactly what I had planned for the story. And like in my head, it was called History Alive, which actually came. So Davina Bell, who was my editor for this one, she had used to work at a school. Oh gosh, it's all intertwined. She used to work at Camberwell Girls Grammar, which is the school I went to. And when we were talking about what the project was, she was like, "Oh, the girls at Camberwell did this thing called History Alive, and they got so into it, and it was like a whole." I don't know if you do this at school, maybe not in secondary school, but like that idea that like it's not like you learn history in history, you learn English in English. It was that sort of idea that you do like a unit on Egypt, and then they would study, they would do maths as they do the pyramids, and they would do art to build like death masks and like sculpt death masks, and then they do English, like, and then they like they basically I can't think of it. Yeah, I'm sure there's like a word for it.
Cross-curricular or project-based learning kind of stuff.
Thank you. So basically they, and then as I spoke to her, it turns out it was exactly what we had planned. And so and the actual sort of the burial of the pharaoh was happening about 3 weeks from then. And so I said, oh, could I please come back and experience it and chat to some of the kids and interview them and get their ideas about that whole process? And so she said, yeah, absolutely. So I was like partly just, I mean, it was so great and really good timing and saved me heaps of time with research because it meant that I could just I went there and chatted to the kids and it was amazing. They did such a great job. Basically, the whole year level all dressed up and throughout the term they'd all been given different roles, which it actually is exactly what they do in the book. So they're all divided into these different roles of like the scribes and the high priests and the artisans and the builders and then they all study different things and then on the actual day they all have their different roles and then they all the parents come along and the whole school like lined the burial path and everyone had to be really respectful as the coffin was passing and it was amazing. It was such a cool thing to go to and then especially afterwards chatting to those kids and just learning from them what they like, what parts about Egypt they thought were the coolest and which parts they liked studying the most. And it kind of helped make it really authentic with what Olive and her classmates ended up going through.
That's awesome. And as I was reading it, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking what a great cross-curricular study you could do for English and history. And I thought, I reckon a Year 7 class could do this too, you know, and I'm probably going to steal the idea of Egypt Alive. I'll send you the pictures.
Please do. No, I totally do. It was really, really fun. And they did. So they actually do like a 1 year, because it's Concert 3-4s, they do 1 year. It's like Voyage coming to Australia, Captain Cook style things. And so it's all, they do that 1 year and then the next year is the Egypt, so they alternate it. Mm-hmm. It was great. And they like wheeled out all the props that they've like built over the years and they had this like massive coffin and it was really, really cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about some of your other writing and when I was having a look at your Twitter feed, I saw something called 60 Secrets for a Happy Bride. Tell me about this.
Yes. So that was a book I published after getting married, which was like a kind of how to not be a nutcase while getting married guide, really. So it's just sort of 60 tips about, how to plan a wedding. But instead of it being like your standard, I guess the obvious things about thinking about what what table settings you're going to have and all those sort of things, it was more, I divided it into different categories so that like relationships is one of them. And so it's like, how do you have those tricky conversations with your parents about money, or how do you communicate with your partner, or the relationships you have with your suppliers, all those sort of things. And then as well, practical stuff like table settings and design and choosing a dress and all those sort of things too. But definitely writing it, the relationship stuff was the most interesting part of that. And I did a lot of research for it actually too. So obviously I drew from my own experience, although I hope that I wasn't too much of a nutcase when I got married. I don't think I was too bad. Ended up chatting to different people who had really from different faiths and ministers and rabbis and then lots of like people who worked in the wedding industry and dress designers and caterers and all that sort of stuff, just to try to make it as broad, like for as broad an audience as possible.
It looked really fun when I had a look at it. I thought I'd have to ask you about it because I thought it would be a bit of a wacky kind of guide, not your traditional guide.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of fun. It's kind of like how to like stay balanced and get organised but also have fun in the lead up to your wedding. Because I think it's really easy to not do those, not really have the fun part, and then you kind of get to the end of it and you're like, what on earth was that all for?
That's right. All that money wasted. What was that for?
part of like there's one of the sections is about the budget too, and about just like how to prioritize things, and how to have that conversation with the bank of mum and dad if you're lucky enough to have one. And, it's been good. I've had some good feedback from it, so I hope it has helped some people. I had a friend of mine who decided they just didn't want to get married, and her partner's parents were like, but we've got all this money that we wanted to give you guys for when you get married. And then they did end up using it on the honeymoon. So that was ended up, they just did this like huge trip around Japan.
Wow. And
that sounds good.
I imagine now it'd be like, oh, can you just please instead, you know, help me with a house loan?
I know, exactly. Yeah, that'll be it.
Now, is writing books something that runs in your family? My family are currently getting the whole kind of Lee Miles experience. We're reading Do Not Open This Book, then we're reading The Pyramid Puzzle. I feel like we're just getting the whole scope of your family's, writing experience. Yeah. So is it something that runs in your family, or was it just kind of an accidental thing that happened with you and your brother?
I think it's an accidental thing in that, both of my parents were primary school teachers. So
that would have helped.
Yeah, I think so. And I have an older brother too, Cam, and he's in a band, and he's always been into writing music, and he and Andy are actually in the same band together now. So I think we've all, it's funny, and Cam's other, like he's a web designer as well, so he runs a digital agency, and then, yeah, he's always had music as his other love. I don't think we all, I don't know, thinking back to childhood, it's not like we all did music and we're all like did acting and like, you know, did the school plays type of thing. I did Scouts growing up, and so I don't know if they have an equivalent up in New South Wales, but I did Campbell Showtime, which was like a gang show is like another term for it, or another sort of style. So kind of like musical theatre stuff I was always really into, and actually Andy was always a big musical theatre buff as well. I don't know if our parents particularly sort of said, go forth and have creative jobs. at school, we all did sport and did music and did other things, but it wasn't like that was the only thing we did. But, I've been asked it a couple of times. I actually have no idea how it all ended up that way. I think maybe because my mum got sick when I was in end of year seven. So she got diagnosed with a condition which is called cerebral vasculitis, which at the time, my dad didn't tell us at the time, but she only had like about a year to live.
Wow.
But she's like 20-something years later, she's still around and kicking.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, she's like...
That's amazing.
A legend. I love her a lot. And she, I think maybe going through that experience of, that really brought our family a lot closer together. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe having that experience made us all kind of go, you never know what's around the corner in your life, and so doing the things you enjoy is important. I think certainly for me I can't talk for Andy and Cam, but for me, they've definitely always supported us, well, me doing things that you want to do. I think, I mean, they're still the first to tell you have a proper job and still study hard and give yourself options and all those sort of things and travel and do all those things. But I think they, I think my mindset of just that you don't know what's coming along in life. So, it's good to just have a crack at the things you enjoy.
And how funny is it as you get even older how much more grateful you are for your parents and your mother and that, isn't it amazing as you get older you appreciate them so much more?
Yeah, and especially now. So I've had, I have two boys now. So Fred is 9 months old and Georgie's three. Especially with them, I'm like, oh, gosh. I feel like I need to call mum every day and be like, sorry, did I do this to you? And you? And I was just like, sorry, mum, what did I do this? Gosh, this is awful, I'm so sorry. And, you're totally, absolutely grateful for all the things that they've done.
Don't you notice when the kids are so small how much they need their mum? And then it makes you kind of, you know, think about your own mum. So it's this whole cycle of when you become a new parent, this whole headspace that you're in.
It's been funny, actually, like writing the character of Olive's mum. I did draw a lot on my mum in that she won't, like I did, I thought it was important for Olive to not have like a stage show mum. Because I thought you wouldn't, it just wouldn't be very authentic, and it would be easy for her to not be down to earth if she kind of had a mum pushing her into this job. So I ended up using I had a character of like Olive's manager, and made her like the stage mum style character. I don't know if you meet her in Pyramid Puzzle actually, but she so I was kind of able to do all that kind of, not the nastiness, but I guess just the opportunistic stuff of someone going, oh, that could be, I'm going to get on the phone and that could be like this thing that's just happened to you, that might actually make a good angle for a story, or this might, I might be able to get an interview or an audition for you with this. And so I've used Anita to play that role so that the mum could just be a mum. And she, I've named her, her name's Belinda, which is after one of my girlfriends who isn't a mum yet, but if she one day is, it's sort of like heart, the character's half what I imagined Belle would be like when Belle's a mum, because she's just, she's great, and she like doesn't suffer fools, and she's has the biggest heart, but also will tell you if you're being out of line. Like in Mammoth Mistake, one of the things my mum, when she first read the book, she was like, oh, that sounds a bit familiar, is that when we were growing up, my mum had this thing that she never let me use the word hate. She was just like, it's a really not a nice word. You're allowed to dislike things, and you're allowed to strongly dislike things, but you're not allowed to hate things, and you're certainly not allowed to ever say that you hate a person. And so I've kind of grown up just, you know, like not like that. The word hate is something that I never use. So I ended up like writing Olive. In Mammoth Mistake, she talks when she's talking about Sophia, because the other actress in the book, she's like, I really dislike her mum. I absolutely 100% dislike her. If I was allowed to say I hate her, I'd absolutely say I hate her, but I just 100% dislike her. So I think, my mum has definitely come through in that way as well.
I love that. But I liked how she had a normal family. I thought it was really important. I think with all those reality TV shows, with those stage mums, I think she'd just come off being like kind of a caricature anyway, and it was nice.
Yeah.
And have this normal family that she could just go back to and be normal again.
Yeah, and I think as well for like the reader to be able to see themselves in it as well, and to feel like they know Olive, and that their story is kind of, similar to what she's going through. I thought that was fun too. Definitely writing the brother was really, really fun. The character of Liam, you kind of get to know him the most in Puppy Planet. And he's definitely a combo. He's her older brother. And because, having two older brothers, that like the dialogue between those two just came very easily and was lots of fun to write.
But what are your writing tips for creating stories for that kind of late primary age student?
I think you just have to be fun is probably is maybe a big part of it. I think just making it fun and accessible. Mm-hmm. I think also giving the characters agency was a good one. Like I know, like with Olive, I can't remember which of the books it was, or it might have even been one of those earlier drafts. It probably was one of those earlier drafts I did before I, you know, like 8 years ago or whatever. But about how, like when, for that age group, in reality, an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old isn't going to be off doing things themselves in life. Like that, you know, there's going to be parental supervision in the most things that they do. But you kind of want the character to be driving the story, not it be that the adult always comes in and solves the problem. So I think that's important to sort of work out ways for it to be realistic still, but still make it that the kid is driving the story and that the kid has agency. It was hard. The hardest one in the Olive books to do that with was in The Robbery Riddle, which is like a whodunit movie that she's acting in. And then on the real thing that happens in her real life is that on set, this famous prop goes missing, and she ends up, she's like so such an eager beaver to try to solve the crime that she ends up looking like the prime suspect. And so then she has to kind of try to clear her name, and that one's funny as well with like the celebrity culture, because it's just like over the news so quickly, and then the paparazzi are out, and so that was lots of fun to write. But the challenge of it was like, if, and I did actually a lot of research, part like to make sure that the film stuff was as authentic as it could be. I used to work at Neighbours years ago, and I ended up interviewing one of the producers there just to speak to them about how being a child actor works and what the logistics are and how many hours they are allowed to be on set and what their, you know, all the things that come with being a child, like the restrictions, I guess, of being an actor when you're young. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that they'd have a chaperone 24/7. And then I was like, well, hang on, Olive has to be on her own to be able to, like, be a possible suspect in this crime. So then you have those challenges of, like, how do you make fun stuff happen? Or in this case, how do you make, like, it possible that she could even do that? So I had to she ends up sneaking off on her chaperone, and then that's the time where that's like the window where the crime could have happened. And then just had to make sure that, like, later on her mum was like, tut tut, that, you know, she shouldn't have done that. But yeah, so it was, I think, making a kid drive it. And I think another thing was about telling a story. I think you probably know this, I bet you, like in sort of terms of secondary school students as well, they've got a really good bullshit meter, kids. Yeah, and adult, like I'm sure teenagers do too, but they're very quick to know when they're being preached to or when they're being read a story with a message. So I think writing a good story, if you've got to kind of approach it thinking, I'm just going to write a good story and hopefully the themes and the messages will come through in your writing, rather than sort of setting out to tell a message. I actually, Halloween Queen was the one which I struggled the most with that one, because it is about identity and body image. And for that one, like I thought, like young girls, like, you know, even I've had a few 6-year-old, like your son who's 6 who's reading it, they, like, all those icky things about body image and all those challenges come up so, so early now, that was something that I remember saying to Davina. I'm like, no, this is a book that every girl in Australia needs to read, and it's going to have a really positive message, and it's going to show them that all this stuff. And Davina was like, well, cool your jets, you actually just stop thinking about that, you just have to tell a good story, just focus on telling a good story. All the other stuff's going to happen because it's important to you, and it's going to come through in your writing, and just have faith in the fact that it will come through and stop trying to actually think about. And it was the best bit of advice because in those early parts of plotting, and even in the first draft of that one, I was kind of, yeah, I was like, oh, but I really want kids to read this and be able to sort of have conversations, like, I've sort of thought of it as like a conversation starter, like that they would kind of come away from it and be able to go, you know, this is something, or that the parents could kind of talk about if they had a similar experience. And but if you're trying to have a message, it's really, really obvious. So I think I hope, and the feedback I've had on that one has been that it has been able to deliver that, but being a fun story at the same time.
Well, kids are also gloriously honest, so I think if they did write the story, they would be happy to tell you.
Yes, that's so true. That's really true.
So what's next for you? Are we going to see more Olive Black, or are you writing or working on something else?
Yeah, so I would love to have another Olive. So we finished the pyramid puzzle, like, it was about 3 days before Freddie, like, was born.
Wow.
So that was definitely a bit tight on the deadline, that one. But yeah, so we kind of, and I'd said to I just wanted a bit of a hangout time. I ended up signing, but like when George was 5 months old when I signed Olive, and then so I kind of went straight, and it was one of, like, it's that hard thing where, like, becoming a mum has been something I've been wanting to do forever, and also, like, writing kids' books has been something I've absolutely wanted to do forever as well. And then they just came right at the same time. And when you've kind of, I don't know, I felt like I had to just jump at it. And I was really lucky that my husband was very supportive and was like, yeah, no, let's just make it work. But it was pretty a busy, busy time trying to do that with a 5-month-old. And so this time around, I said, look, I'm just going to have a break and hang out with Fred for a little bit. And so, yeah, I've been enjoying doing that. And I've just about, so we've parked Olive for the moment. We'll just see what happens. But I've actually just started in the last kind of week or so working on a new series with Penguin, which is coming out in July. The first two are coming out in July next year. And the next two, I think maybe like October next year or something. And it is a series, it's with the Girl Geek Academy is like the group that we're working on it with. And it's about a group of four friends who are all geeks. And it's about sort of embracing your geekiness and I guess girls kind of being into STEM subjects, really. It's like about friendship and them sort of learning about technology and how you build the internet and how you use 3D printers and build video games and all that sort of stuff. So it's like very, very early stages yet. We don't have a name or anything, but yeah, stay tuned. That will be July next year that those are coming out.
That sounds amazing. And geeks are just so cool now anyway. So.
I know. I'm going to channel my like old days in Scouts and be like, yeah.
That's it. Finally, we're cool. Only took decades, but finally.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Alex. Like I said, I thought the Pyramid Puzzle was such a joy to read, and I'm reading it again, so hopefully I'm going to enjoy it probably even more. Thank you so much for the chat. I really enjoyed chatting to you about a really different kind of unique book that I think is really fun for kids to read.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.